Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. The other day, the New Orleans District Attorney's Office issued a press release saying Peter Visage of the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office achieved a significant victory on February 20th with the conviction of defendant Kevin Vicknair for second-degree rape. The verdict was delivered in a bench trial presided over by the Honorable Judge Angel Harrison, Section L. This case stemmed from a delayed report of domestic abuse rape dating back to August of 2016, which was brought to light only in 2021. The victim, who endured physical, emotional, and sexual abuse throughout her 40-year marriage to the defendant, took a courageous step to document the abuse. Setting up a hidden camera in her room, she captured the harrowing events leading up to the rape. The footage revealed the defendant's violent actions as he forcibly assaulted her. Despite the defendant's claims that no one would believe her, the victim bravely held on to the evidence until she could safely leave the abusive situation. In 2021, she reported the rape to the Family Justice Center, leading to the prosecution and eventual conviction of Kevin Vicknair. And now, the rest of the story with Rafael Goyeneche. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Right. So, you know, one of the toughest cases to secure the continued cooperation of to hold violent offenders accountable are sexual assaults and rapes. So this is very typical in many respects, but also atypical in a number of respects, where it takes a lot for victims to work through the process, because it really is a long and winding road as a sexual assault victim to report it and follow through. And, you know, this is, you know, an example of, you know, a really courageous victim stepping forward and having to bare her soul to criminal justice. And under Louisiana law, the defendant has the right, and that's the exclusive right, to either be tried by a judge or a jury. So the defendant in this case waived the right to a jury trial and elected to be tried by a judge. And so this case was tried in February of 2024. It was a judge trial. So the judge is the trier of facts, taking the place of the jury. And as you pointed out, the case was largely built on the video footage that the victim secured by planting a hidden camera in her room when she was sexually assaulted. And she was in an abusive relationship for 40 years, you know, with the defendant, her now former husband. And after the judge heard all of the facts, the judge came back with a guilty as charged verdict of second-degree rape. And that carries a mandatory minimum of 5 and a maximum of 40 years. So fast forward to about a week ago, the judge sentenced the defendant and granted him probation. So she ignored Louisiana Revised Statute 1442.1, which sets forth the mandatory minimum sentence requirements for the offense that she found him guilty of. And then she further ignored the provisions of Louisiana law by allowing for a downward departure. So under certain provisions of the law, an offense that requires a mandatory minimum, the law provides that under certain circumstances, the defendant can petition the court or the district attorney's office can move on their own to allow the judge to deviate from the mandatory minimums. But that provision of the law excludes sex offenses and particularly second-degree rape. So I think the judge not only violated one state law, but two state laws in granting this offender a probated sentence. So she sentenced him to 7 years, but suspended those 7 years and placed him on active probation for 3 years. And the district attorney's office objected to that, and now they have to go through the process of appealing the judge's illegal sentence that was rendered in this case. And this is the type of case that, A, has a chilling effect on victims and witnesses in crimes of violence, and B, I think, undermines public confidence in the criminal justice system in general and the judiciary in particular. So this is, you know, last week we talked about what happens when the district attorney's office, what are the consequences when the district attorney's office doesn't do its job appropriately. And we talked about the Darnell Hunter case where the DA's office allowed a violent and repeat offender to receive probation. And within a few months of him being granted a probated sentence, he committed a murder. And this is an example of the judiciary, more particularly Judge Harris, not doing her job to, she takes an oath to follow and enforce the laws of Louisiana. She violated that oath, in my opinion, with this ruling. And now we're going to have to wait for an appellate court to reverse her and remand the case to her for her to impose a legal sentence. But again, this is a sad statement as to, A, the judge's knowledge of the law, or B, her indifference to the law. Either scenario, either way you slice it, it's unacceptable. And I think it's important that the public hear more about this particular case because of the consequences that these types of rulings have in undermining public confidence in the criminal justice system and the judiciary in particular.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Rafi. She's not ignorant of the law, right? I mean, there are two laws here, 1442.1 and Code of Criminal Procedure 890.1, right? I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, the language, as you just articulated, in both of these statutes, or the statute and the Code of Criminal Procedure, is so clear, it's scary, right? So this is not not knowing the law. This begs the question, why? And there's an outcome that she wanted, I think, based on her ideological bent. She comes from the criminal defense bar. You know, we look at things differently. And I don't know how else to say it. You know, we have those that have spent their life prosecuting. We've had those that spent their life on the defense side. And we've had those that have prosecuted and then moved to the defense side. And there's always these little nuances about what they believe. But when you're staring what's obvious in the law in the face and you still try and do something differently, you know, this is where I get frustrated with the court, where they should be sanctioned. The court should be sanctioned here because they know better. They know better. And we're not going to clean this mess up. You know, I just had a similar conversation with council member Helena Moreno about guns. You know, one of the issues with the, you know, thinking about the gun-free zone that you and I have talked about in the French Quarter and otherwise, and I'm hearing from legislators, you know, they said, you know, it's kind of ripe for y'all to be up here asking about this, that, and otherwise, when your own criminal justice system doesn't take to heart guns, you know, and they point to, of course, the Emily Maugh happenstance, right, where we just take action devoid of the law. We act in a way that's just not serious about guns at all. And it really puts the whole everybody on the defensive. How do you defend that? I can't. Can you? And you can't have a legitimate conversation because our house is not in order. And here's another example of the house not being in order.
Right. So, you know, you're right. I agree. The judge knew the law. So the judge issued, you know, an opinion and in defense of what she's doing. And, of course, her sentence was defended by the defendant's defense counsel.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing
who also knows the law.
Exactly. But his job is to defend his client, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, the judge is supposed to be fair and impartial and apply the law. What I don't understand is if the judge felt that the sentence was too harsh, as the trier of the fact, she had the ability to render a lesser included verdict if she so chose. And she didn't. So she basically came to the conclusion that the state met its burden of proof in proving this defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I certainly think that, you know, in this particular case, if this had just been he said, she said, it had been very, very tough to obtain a conviction, but there was video evidence, and even the judge couldn't ignore the video evidence. Hence, even though she may not have wanted to have found him guilty because maybe she has a defendant-centric philosophy, more concerned with the defendants than they are with the victims and witnesses and law-abiding citizens. But she nonetheless found him guilty as charged based on the evidence, but she could have come back with a lesser charge that would have possibly, depending on what the lesser offense that she found him guilty of, allowed for her to do what she did, but she ignored the law with respect to the sentencing requirements, followed the law with respect to the evidence and the burden of proof, and now she is trying to justify what is legally indefensible, in my opinion. And we'll find out, I think, in short measure from the appellate courts, how if this case is remanded, as I expect that it will be, for resentencing. And then and only then will this victim that has struggled through this process for the better part of 8 years may receive justice and closure.
Yeah. And it's not like we don't have a lot of other things to do, right? I mean, when things are as evident as this is, you know, in carrying this out, now we have to go consume more assets of an organization, the district attorney's office, that has limited resources. We know that for a fact. You know, to go tie up these resources in this fashion. I mean, it's just...
So the DA's office did everything right in this particular case. In fact,
absolutely.
They warned the judge that this is illegal. They cited the law to her. And so even if she hadn't looked it up, even if she didn't want to, you know, do her homework on this, the district attorney's office did the homework for her. And she still did what she did. which, you know, I think you're right in that this type of conduct is, in my opinion, a violation of some of the judicial canons. And the Office of Disciplinary Counsel for the State Judiciary Commission, they could take a look at this case and open a file on this judge. Now, do I think that's going to result in her removal from office? No. But just like with everything else, discipline is progressive. And I think that, you know, the Supreme Court needs to take notice of a judge that is ignoring the law and flouting the law. And she needs to be, if not publicly, at least privately reprimanded if this is her first offense, and admonished that this better not happen going forward or the consequences could be more severe.
You know, I wouldn't hold my breath waiting on that, but that's why we find ourselves in the situation that we find ourselves in society today.
Well, a lot of the sanctions that are issued to judges, particularly for judges that, you know, in a matter like this, they're not public.
And, no, you know, of course
that's
not.
That's under the law. So, you know, the public is shielded. You know, we elect judges, and very rarely is an incumbent judge even challenged. So basically, once you're elected, you're there practically for as long as you want to be, for all intents and purposes, in large part because if judges have done anything improper, the laws of Louisiana shield the public from being aware of judicial misconduct in many respects. And that's something that requires some changes in the law, but, you know, that's not going to, we can't do that retroactively. But, you know, this particular case, I think, needs to be aired out in public. Public needs to be aware of it. And Judge Harris, in my opinion, owes the public an apology if this case is reversed by the appellate courts, as I expect it will be.
Why would we want the public to know, right?
I mean, right.
We're the only, we have to go in the voting booth and vote, you know, these people up or down. Why would we want to know any information, positive, negative, or otherwise? Let me ask you.
The judges are rarely even, you know, challenged. But, you know, now maybe with this type of exposure, maybe someone will decide to run against Judge Harris when she comes up for re-election.
Well, this is the perfect example of why we need to vote down Senate Bill 482, right? This public records law. Where do you stand on this thing? I mean, you know, when I think about how much information would probably be shielded from you and others, you know, of this deliberative process and this and that. I mean, when I think back over the years of all of the topics of discussion that we've had, and I look at this bill and I'm saying, you know, first off, with this deliberative process, it's a pretty broad term, right?
Right.
This is a travesty that these folks are even, these are the law and order folks that are allegedly thinking about this. What are we doing?
Right. Right. No, the public records legislation that's pending right now is basically, I haven't seen an attempt like this since the Jindal administration, where Governor Jindal attempted to essentially exempt the governor's office from Public Records Act. This legislation, I think, goes beyond even that. Yes, it includes shielding the deliberative processes involved in the governor's office, but it also applies to every agency. So essentially, everything could be construed as being part of the deliberative processes in every agency in the state. And then on top of it, some of the legislation requires you to prove that you're a Louisiana citizen before you go, which would be another chilling impact on the public getting access to information. I think we ought to be, rather than looking for excuses to not provide the information, I think we ought to be digitizing the information, and it should be put online, and the public should have direct access to it just by a couple of clicks of the button. Rather than making public records requests, I think all of the information should be placed online for the public to be able to glean the information that they, I think, are entitled to know about government in Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where this bill is supposed to be heard on the Senate floor today. Senate Bill 482 by Senator Heather Cloud from Turkey Creek, Louisiana. I understand it's not going to be heard today. I just got word from some folks that it's not going to be. They're trying to amend this. I don't know why they need to touch it at all. You know, it ain't broke. Why you got to fix it? What are you trying to fix?
Right, right. No, I mean, again, a lot of the things that come out of the legislature defy common sense and logic. And that is one. The other is some of the concealed carry legislation that we've been following, and maybe we can talk about some of that in the next segment.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Let's get to a break right now. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Give us a shout or text on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.